Chapter 5. Syndications Building Partnerships. How many millionaires do you know who have become wealthy by investing in savings accounts? I rest my case. Robert G. Allen. My epic $40,000 failure. I've benefited immensely from moving into syndications. That's why they are such an important part of floor 2 of the wealth elevator. But I've seen the dark side too. Back in 2012, when I decided to invest my self-directed IRA funds, I asked a self-directed IRA custodian, whom I met at one of those real estate vendor expos, if they could recommend a general partner, GP, to invest my money with. They gave me the name of a syndication operator, and I invested about $40,000 with this GP. I got a harsh wake-up call when that GP lost every cent of my money. I learned an important lesson. Work with people who have a solid track record in such deals. As much as I beat myself up for the loss, I was ill-equipped to vet out this bad actor. Back then, I didn't know anyone who was a millionaire, let alone investing in syndication deals. I got a referral from a fake investor. In this case, remember, it was that young sales guy working for that IRA custodian. The sales guy was not an investor himself. He'd probably had a few beers with that GP the night before the event. He wanted to look cool, so he name-dropped anyone he could think of. Or worse, he had some sort of referral or affiliate relationship where he was compensated for making the referral. And trust me, guys, I see a lot of these internet forums out there and supposedly review sites. When you really look behind the scenes, there's these kind of kickbacks and backhanded sponsorships that's going on. And I think that's what separates us from the rest. As the general partner or sponsor, we're the ones who have kind of skin in the game going in as these deals by either the operator itself or the fund manager. My story is not unique. Many new LP investors have experienced being deceived in their initial real estate deals. They often fall prey to the allure of shiny pitch books and manufactured real estate celebrities. Unfortunately, I did not have the oversight of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in that deal that went bad. I was too green as an investor at that time, and I didn't have much recourse because what I had signed was a JV agreement. I did not sign as a limited partner with SEC protection, that huge private placement memorandum we talked about in the last chapter. Many seasoned and sophisticated investors have encountered embarrassing losses like this early in their careers when they did not know better. However, we move forward and learn from our experiences. I have made it a point to help others navigate this challenging phase, to acknowledge the risks and take proactive steps to prevent our community members from suffering such losses. All our syndications are structured with general partners and limited partners, so our investors are protected within SEC oversight. Building a syndication portfolio is all about partnerships. In this chapter, I discuss the upsides and downsides of syndications and how to find the right operator and how to protect yourself from bad actors. The upsides and downsides of syndication. Syndications allow for pass-through of tax benefits and better returns than traditional investments because the project offers some sort of value-add business plan. Unlike traditional Wall Street investments and REITs, the deals have fewer middlemen taking a cut. Syndications also possess these upside characteristics. Truly passive. As long as you pick a good operator, you don't have to do any managing yourself, which allows you to focus on portfolio management in your comfortable office rather than boots on the ground project asset management. Plus, you get to take advantage of the lender relationships that the GP has. You get regular updates on the deal if you want to keep up with the status of the project, and are therefore free to leverage your time for better uses. That might be your high-paid day job, relaxation with family and friends, or your favorite hobbies. Scalable. You can invest in as many syndications as you want, and increase your investment size accordingly. For accounting and tax purposes, it does not get any easier. You're given a simple K-1 or Form 1099 for each deal that you're in, which you hand to your CPA. Tax advantage. Since the asset is larger, the GP is likely to do a cost segregation to increase the amount of losses you claim, as well as take advantage of new bonus depreciation laws. Therefore, you, the LP, get better tax benefits from syndications than you do with rental properties. More on that in Chapter 7. Diversified. Syndications can invest in any asset class, in any geographic location. That makes it easier to get into the right markets and morph your portfolio as trends change. It's crazy to think of mom-and-pop investors with the majority of their net worth tied up in one or two buildings located in one geographic area. That is not safe diversification. As I mentioned, I am in over 100 deals personally, but most investors tend to consolidate their investments to 20 to 40 deals as their alternative asset portfolio. This is one of my big cases against traditionally mom-and-pop investors. What they'll do is they'll have a property or a few, 1031 them into more properties. But essentially what's happening is their equity is being consolidated into one, two, or three properties. Again, that is not diversification. If that's you, just be aware of that. Debt and liability protection. By riding on the track record and the borrowing expertise of the GP, you can benefit by leveraging better commercial loans. But as an LP, you are not the one signing on the debt. The GP is. And therefore, the debt is not under your name and does not show up on credit reports. Similarly, in terms of liability from litigation, being an LP means you are not the target of lawsuits that stem from the company or asset. You are under the radar as a passive partner. The way we like to explain it is just like how you're investing in a stock like AT&T. AT&T, I'm sure they get sued all the time. But as a passive partner or shareholder, you don't have to really worry about that. And this is the beauty of being an LP partner. We pride ourselves as a syndication company that is transparent with our investors. I would be in misalignment if I didn't discuss candidly the cons of investing in syndications. I've already mentioned the biggest risks, of course, shady operators. Downsides include counterparty risk and control. Counterparty risks. The horror story I mentioned earlier is formally called the counterparty risk coming to fruition. You're putting a lot of trust in your operator, and that trust can be misplaced. This is why we are a lot more transparent than most operators. We want investors to understand what they are getting into because we want long-term relationships. If you can eliminate the risk of working with dishonest GPs, it's really hard to lose your money or principal investment when you're investing in cash flowing assets backed by hard assets like a real estate. Although I don't possess concrete data other than my own insider experience to support this claim, I strongly believe that the majority of investor capital losses are attributable to counterparty risks posed by dishonest operators rather than non-performing investments. The SEC serves as a backstop, but as an investor, you may not want to spend your time and money to litigate. I hope this book and our e-courses support you to educate yourself as a precautionary measure. Control. As a passive investor, you're not in a position to get sued because you are not a managing member, but you are giving up control to the general partner over decisions such as when exactly an asset is sold or the continuation of the business plan. In such cases, LPs rely heavily on the expertise, insights, and knowledge of the operators involved to make the best decisions for all stakeholders. While such instances are not very common, I have witnessed situations where an operator has chosen to prematurely exit a deal with 80% return in just 3 years. It would have been better for investors to continue with the original business plan, aiming for a potential 3x equity multiplier within the next year or two. The GP opted to take the early lower return exit in order to solidify their impressive track record and use it as a marketing tool to attract new investors. In this scenario, a conflict is evident between the interests of investors and the operator. Of course, LPs have the decision of rejoining the GP in a future venue. This will depend on whether they close the last deal with a sour taste in their mouths or a sweet taste from nearly doubling their money in 3 years. Long story short, find an operator you can trust. If you're investing in property structured deals where the splits incentivize the GP to perform, then you're putting yourself in a position to win. Syndication e-course. I offer a syndication e-course. If you really want to geek out on vetting more operators, sign up. We have a mock scorecard to help new investors complete due diligence on deals and GPs. At the very least, it would help you start to ask the right questions. Go to thewealthelevator.com/syndication to sign up for that and get access to our members portal. Find the right operator. I'd love to provide a surefire way to vet potential partners. Unfortunately, you can't truly know somebody until you've worked closely with them. But you can do your homework. You need to seek out referrals. But not all referrals are the same. Try to get referrals from purely passive investors who are not getting any kickbacks and have invested their own money with a particular GP. Find purely passive investors who have actually worked with that GP. When you find these rare LPs, take the time to create real organic relationships with peers rather than getting transactional referral checks. From there, you will be able to help each other vet deals and operators and grow together beyond money and investments. You're going to need a strong LP network. A lot of inexperienced GPs come from the fake it till you make it syndicator and guru-led education groups that turn out hundreds of entrepreneurs every year. The crazy thing is a lot of these newly minted GPs are still working their day jobs. You don't want your money to become their training ground with little or no returns to you so they can get lucky and quit their day jobs. To hear the full saga of the scammer operator who tricked me out of $40,000, go to thewealthelevator.com/fail, F-A-I-L, red flags in a general partner. When you are considering a syndication, choose a general partner with a solid track record. Here's a checklist. What is the reputation of the individual and their company? Have you done research on the partner and the company to verify their expertise? A simple Google search on the leadership team members is a good start. Lack a digital footprint? Run. It's too easy to get a logo and LLC done for just another capital group company. And then when things go bad, scrap it and get a new one. What is their asset level? I would look for at least $1 billion of assets owned. As of this writing, our assets under ownership is at $2.1 billion. And like I said, there are many people running around saying they've done $300 million of real estate, which first of all is not very much experience, but you don't know if they were just a passive investor in a handful of deals or if they were the leading general partner sponsor. So this can be misleading. Next, the person or company who referred you to this operator get paid to send you. Again, a lot of internet forums out there being compensated in the background to promoting a certain company. Did the person who referred you invest their own money in the operator they referred you to? My IRA custodian was not a passive investor that hooked me up with that bad operator. A lot of poser LP and GP investors will have people who refer to them, but those people don't have anything invested themselves. Similarly, a lot of websites are littered with fake reviews. Did you hear this person speak on a podcast, but didn't do any research on them? Podcasts have become a circus of people going around and guesting or paying to speak on other people's platforms. On my podcast, we have a policy of no guru or fake it till you make it speakers. Did you find this person on LinkedIn, but didn't check out their track record? We all know how we make ourselves look better on social media. In fact, a lot of these guru groups and education groups that help GPs get started, they focus more on creating a social media presence than operating the damn asset. Did you meet them at an investor conference and now they want you to invest in a big ticket program as an upsell? Beware of investor training programs that promote students in a circuitous trade as a way to market for new students. For example, hey, pay us $50,000 and we will put you on stage to pitch the audience, or at least take some high resolution pictures of you with a mic in their hand so you can look authoritative. Is the individual a syndicator who is only raising capital for a deal and not serving as the operator, as is the most recent trend out there? These daisy chain deals grab a bunch of smaller GPs to raise equity just so the main GP can make money by bringing in investors. This is typically illegal per SEC, unless the syndicators have a broker-dealer license. Unfortunately, it is very common in the new GP space and can manifest in problems down the road, especially if the deal does not perform. It is crucial to understand the distinction between operators and syndicators. We are operators who take an active role in the projects we undertake and also serve as financial backers of the projects and the loan guarantors with the bank. That means that if any issues arise along the way, We are the ones who step in and take action to resolve them. Our commitment to being actively involved separates us apart from others in the field. People often send me deals that I am not the operator, GP on, and ask me if they should invest. My first question is always, who do you know who's actually invested with this syndicator? If they say, oh no, I just saw him on LinkedIn, or he was a guest on a podcast I really respect, I put up the red flag and wave it hard. Abort, abort. The great news is that you will find lots of green flags that will help you know an operator is legitimate. Then it's full steam ahead. Green flags in a general partner. An organic passive investor connection has referred you to the operator and has actually done business with them. The operator has testimonials from investors who have achieved returns from their deals. Video and written testimonials can be fake in this day and age, but it's a start. See our examples at thewealthelevator.com/testimonials to know what to look for in a real testimonial. The GP or operator has a clean public record. We have interviewed law enforcement officials and private investigators on the Wealth Elevator podcast, and they have recommended doing a simple Google search as a base level background check on potential partners. Remember, having a podcast doesn't count as proof. Someone is legit. Post-2018, it seems everyone has a podcast and understands that it is a relatively cheap but effective form of marketing. The operator GP puts their own money into their deals and signs on to the debt. That means they have aligned interests and skin in the game. This contrasts with traditional Wall Street investments, where financial planners and brokers are effectively commission-compensated salespeople with no tie to the end result of your investment. This is why I like syndications and just in the spirit on how they are structured, where there is a split of the profits, whether more or less going to the LPGP, there's aligned interests there. And again, that is not in traditional investments offered in the Wall Street world. And finally, the operator does not have any other side gigs or a day job. Their sole focus is to lead their syndication team to optimize your investment funds. Build real relationships. At the end of the day, the only way to be sure is to build real relationships. That takes time and effort. It can be the hardest part of this process. As you start to seek out new relationships, beware of real estate scams. As I grew my investor base and started interacting with more high net worth accredited investors, I saw what a sham the local real estate club and real estate conference world is. Most of these local events and national conferences are put on by the organizers to make themselves look good. Their students often pay exorbitant tuition for a manufactured stage to speak on. Comically, in these circles, it seems people are spending more time taking photos in suits and using them for their digital marketing or social media than learning about underwriting or the many aspects of operation. Not the people you want to be entrusting your hard-earned money to. The other purpose for these conferences is to sell more services. A lot of these programs are designed to convince young, lower net worth people to jump into a $50,000 coaching program. After all, if they make Joe Syndicator look good and give them a 30-minute speaking slot to pitch to unsophisticated passive investors, maybe the tuition is worth it. The truth is, everyone in the room is trying to fake it till they make it. And I would not invest with anyone until they have gone full cycle with at least a handful of deals. I personally would like to see some failure or grit in operators, which will happen after a few dozen deals or going over that $1 billion of assets owned threshold. This is what sets our tribe apart from those who are trying to attract lower net worth wannabe general partners operators. We fill our events with high net worth accredited investors who are not looking to go backwards in life and trade time, sweat, risk for money and to be GPs, but are looking to invest passively in alternative investment syndications. In addition, we focus on bringing in people with high quality mindsets and personalities. Our events are invite only. I will go into more detail on building your passive investor network in chapter 10. But for now, understand that you will need to be selective on who you interact with, and oftentimes very discriminatory by taking inventory of others' education, profession, and net worth metrics. My transition from rentals to syndications. In 2016, 4 years after my $40,000 loss in 2012, I decided to go down the GP path and lead my own syndications. I had a huge advantage because a lot of investors trusted me and wanted to join me in projects. Additionally, that loss in 2012 had made it hard to trust others. I wanted to take my fate in my own hands. In one of my first deals as a GP, I learned the importance of working with partners who had integrity. A few quarters into the project, some of the numbers started to seem fishy. When I investigated with a forensic accountant, I found that the other GP had listed sinks and toilets under expenses, even though those items were not being installed in our units. I eventually realized that the partner was stealing materials and labor hours from the partnership and throwing it into his personal assets. Luckily, as a general partner overseeing the deal, I was able to rally my limited partners. We held a proxy vote and removed the rogue GP. It was a nightmare deal, but at the end of the day, even without recovering the missing funds, we all made money. Wow, I thought, this real estate stuff really works, even when everything goes wrong. From that point on, I focused my energy on syndications. In just 1 year, I went from 0 to 30% of my net worth in syndications. For some people, that same transition might take as little as 6 months. For others, it could be 3 to 4 years. Soon after, I sold all my rentals and put the majority of my net worth into syndication equity. I quit my engineering job to dedicate all my bandwidth to protecting and growing my investors' capital. Once our investor group got to $1 billion in assets in 2020, I focused on growing the team with professionals in their own verticals who were better than us in our roles as GPs. Many of these people had been in the industry longer than we've been real estate investors ourselves. This is what sets apart new operators who are still mom and pop operators with a cool company logo and a website apart from a more institutionally sophisticated company. The evolution of investor allocations. Unlike me, many of our investors have never owned a rental on their own. They haven't seen the phenomenon of a tenant paying the rent and the excess after expenses pile up month after month. Our investors are normally cautious, and they typically begin by allocating 10 to 20% of their net worth into alternative assets. These prudent investors don't bet the farm on something they don't have any personal proof of concept with. I don't blame them. I remember that it took me a decade to finally withdraw my money from the 401k retirement plan. I wish I had done it sooner. The world of alternatives and methods of wealth was so distant from the everyone else is doing it mentality. When you enter this initial test phase, which spans 2 to 5 years, you may find yourself anxiously awaiting your first full cycle deal. That anticipation is exhilarating, but it can also be nerve-wracking. It is crucial to strike a balance between staying informed and not becoming consumed by the waiting game. You may have been tempted to overanalyze market trends and investment performance. Don't do it. It just leads to unnecessary stress. More importantly, it takes your focus away from your primary goal, which is to make more money at your job or business so you can invest more in the future. You have to wait to allow the multi-year business plan powered by the sweat equity of the GP to take place. Trust the process and people and refocus on personal fulfillment. Engage in other aspects of life. The waiting game is an inherent part of the investment journey, and the outcome will ultimately reveal whether the investments and people you've entrusted were wisely chosen or not. During this phase, I have seen many investors fall victim to overdosage of unofficial media or influences in the form of hundreds of podcasts and YouTube videos trying to use scare tactics and fear porn to keep you engaged. That fills your head with a crippling amount of conflicting information. After 2020, a lot of scammers who ran those in-person high-pressure sales conferences had to pivot in a socially distant post-COVID-19 world and move online. As a result, the quality of podcasts and YouTube content drastically decreased. This type of media is known by insiders as free marketing channels for those looking to solicit the masses, especially in the financial services industry. Investing in knowledge and paying for expert advice can provide the confidence you need to surpass the 10 to 20% test threshold and expedite your path to the third floor on the wealth elevator faster. However, it should be done through networking opportunities with other high caliber investors. the emphasis should be on meaningful connections and building long-term connections with other quality passive accredited investors. As your alternative investments begin to show promising returns by going full cycle, finally, you will feel more confident transitioning from the 10 to 20% range of your net worth to higher allocations of 30 to 50%. For those of you who are over $3 to $4 million net worth, or 60 to 80% for those of you under $2 to $3 million net worth. The reason their difference right there is the lower your net worth, the more you're going to have a heavier concentration of alternative assets, as opposed to if you are closer to that end game level, which we'll talk about later, of $4 to $5 million net worth for the average client. You have proof of concept? Now you have to press the gas. One of my clients had a net worth of $1.5 million, but his alternative investment portfolio was only $400,000, just 26% of his total portfolio. He has been investing with me for several years, and more importantly, has successfully gone full cycle with some of those deals. I told him, this is the hard part for you. You've got proof of concept. It's working. Now is the time you turn that puppy up and get that alternative investment up 50 to 70%. With other slightly lower net worth clients, I tell them to get those investments as high as 90% of their net worth. That isn't right for everyone, but for tax benefits and better returns, you need to pass that 50% margin, especially if you're on the lower threshold of the net worth scale. The evolution of investor allocations in the world of alternative investments is a dynamic process, starting with 10 to 20% of their net worth. Investors gradually expand their allocations based on experience and confidence, but mostly based on the peer ecosystem they create around themselves. And I'll just share personally, as I mentioned earlier in the chapter, me going from 30% of syndications in my portfolio, you have to keep in mind that even before then, the vast majority of my portfolio was already in alternative investments. They were just in those little rental properties, which was probably a lot more volatile than syndications. I, for one, was very aggressive putting upwards of 90% of my net worth into these types of investments. And doing so, I got better returns and I paid no taxes for several years in a row. And that's essentially the formula that we teach. Get into alternative investment deals for better yields. That way you get passive losses through the depreciation of the real estate to play these other games with your taxes, which we'll get to in a future chapter, and then flow it all through accredited investor banking. And this trifecta of strategies is what we'll piece together here as we get through the later chapters. But that said, I don't think most people will follow exactly what I did and go as heavily into alternative assets. But that was what I needed to do. When I first graduated college and my first decade of investing, I was not an accredited investor yet. It took me a while to get over the hump. Many of you folks reading this likely starting at a better place than I did. But as I look at people's financial profiles and we jump on the private calls with you guys, it's definitely something I key in on. How much of your portfolio is in alternative investments? Again, not including your primary residence in that.